This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking about ocean health. But first, who leads the world in science? Consider these facts. From 1991 to 2000, U.S. scientists earned the majority, that's 57%, of the 61 Nobel Prizes in science. But the U.S. now ranks 17th among nations surveyed in the proportion of 18 to 24-year-olds studying science. The U.S. spends more on research and development than any other country, but in a survey of 25 industrialized nations, U.S. students were ranked 19th in performance in math and 14th in science. And a new report by the National Science Board, which is an arm of the National Science Foundation, says that the U.S. is in danger of losing our scientific edge. Are we losing our edge, or are other nations just catching up to the U.S.? Are we headed for a crisis? Joining me now to talk about it is my guest, William Broad. He's a science writer for the New York Times. He joined us by phone. Welcome back to Science Friday, Bill.
Ira, thanks.
You've written extensively about this in the Times, and let me just quote one little section here. You write, "Foreign advances in basic science now often rival or even exceed America's, apparently with little public awareness of the trend or its implications for jobs, industry, national security, or the vigor of the nation's intellectual and cultural life." That's a far-reaching statement.
What a mouthful. what an outrage. Who wrote that?
I mean, is this something that has been creeping up on us now, or why is this happening now? Or is it something that, as you say, it's gained little notice, but it's been evident to people who study this?
I think it's the latter case. I mean, there are lots of people who've been trying to make a lot of noise about this, but it hasn't carried very far. And it's a little, the problem, I think, is a little bit of each, as you laid it out. We are losing our edge a little bit, but probably the bigger phenomenon is that the rest of the world is catching up to us. We're still the big kid on the block, but a lot of those little kids have grown up, and when they all get together and pull hard, they can pose some pretty stiff competition for us.
So do we have to then become more competitive, or just say this is how the world works now?
I would say a little of each. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not going to, and we don't want this phenomena to go away, right? The United States, for decades, has struggled with its foreign policy and in all kinds of ways to help the world get on this track, you know, to develop knowledge-based economies and to lift all the boats, you know, in Kennedy's metaphor. And it's a good thing, right? I mean, we want to eradicate world poverty and get everybody on the gravy train. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we don't want to, you know, lose our edge. If you just, you know, one thing that I write about a lot is national defense issues and security. You know, just in that arena alone, you don't want to lose your edge. You want to have the best and the brightest working for you. And if for no other reason, we want to, keep up our snuff on that score.
Now, this report from the National Science Board says that there's a troubling decline in the number of Americans training to be scientists, and such trends threaten the economic welfare and security of our country. Is that a number that's been going down steadily?
I think on the supply side, it is. I mean, there are fewer and fewer Americans who are showing strong interest in science careers and have been becoming scientists. And we've been filling the gap with bright foreigners who've been coming in for a long time. That's been a rising phenomena. The problem is that as the world gets more competitive, we're not going to have such an easy time getting these bright foreigners anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're going to somehow have to start growing our own talent more vigorously. That's going to be a hard job because people, you know, the trend has been downward. Yeah. You know, sports, entertainment, law, there's lots of high-profile professions out there, as you know, that tend to, to get the best and the brightest. Science needs to pull together, and they... God, these people need to lobby harder, you know?
Yeah.
Scientists as a group just tend not to be, you know, articulate go-getters who band together, and they really need to. One of the exceptions, a wonderful guy at this NSF press conference last week, what's his name? Was it Robert Richardson, mm-hmm. Robert Richardson, the vice provost of research at Cornell, was wonderfully articulate about this stuff and wonderfully articulate about how science education in this country really needs a revolution. You know, not the rote memorization of lists and the sort of receiving science as sort of received wisdom, and instead stressing the discovery and the process of it, you know, so that people can get caught by the magic and can learn it from the inside out. Then, you know, all the facts make sense and you want to learn more.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have talked about, you brought up an interesting point about why go into science if there are, you know, these other businesses are much more lucrative.
Right.
We have talked about, for example, physicists. So, you know, I think the most popular job for physicists now are on Wall Street.
Right. Right. That's where go where the money is.
You know, they get paid what, probably five times what they would get.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Use that money and use that education to make some money with it. Mm-hmm. It's supply and demand. Maybe as we start to, you know, lose our scientific brain trust, the market will respond and we'll start paying these people more, and they'll make a better wage, and more bright people will be attracted to these fields.
Mm-hmm. Could this be seen as sort of the outsourcing problem we see with jobs going to other countries?
I see this as sort of the substratum of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the elements underneath outsourcing, right? India and China and a lot of these developing countries are starting to cook, and they're starting to be able to do the research there. One of the guys I quoted in my piece on Monday said that there are 400 private research centers that have now been set up in China. Well, that's not just because the prices are right, although that helps. They've also got some very bright people over there who are working hard and are working harder every day at mastering this minutia and advancing the science adventure.
Mm.
That's going to send jobs overseas. That's going to send profits overseas. So, you know, there's a scientific substratum to this outsourcing issue that we're seeing here.
How much of it has to do with the war on terrorism and foreign grad students used to come in very quite freely all the time to study and get their PhDs and possibly stay here?
Right. That's definitely part of it. The statistics show us a sharp drop-off in visas after 9/11, and it's a real dilemma. You want to be smart. You don't want to let every person who wants to come in, because we'll get hurt that way. On the other hand, you have to have smart screening, and you have to let serious, bright individuals who want to do good for themselves and for our country, you have to open the door to them. I mean, from how long have we done this? I mean, the whole Manhattan Project and World War II, I mean, all those displaced geniuses from Europe, you know, Fermi and Beta and Teller. I mean, this country has this long legacy of relying on bright foreigners to help it with its science,
mm-hmm.
And somehow we've got to keep that working as best we can, at the same time pull ourselves up to the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Bill, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Hey, a pleasure, Ira. Talk to you later.
Right. Bill Broad, science writer for The New York Times, who was joining us by phone, had written a very interesting series of articles on this race for science supremacy around the world.